Well, another long story. We seem to have a series of them these days. Last week, we had that long story about Jesus' encounter with the Samaritan woman at the well. And today, we have another long story about Jesus' encounter with a man blind from birth. And that occasions this kind of strange question, at least strange from our perspective, about whether the man sinned or his parents were guilty of sin. That's what the disciples were asking Jesus. And they were asking that because it was the common understanding at the time of Jesus that misfortune in life was brought because somehow the people on whom the misfortune is visited were guilty of some sort of infraction, of some sort of sin, of not keeping the law. And so it's kind of a silly question when you think of it too much. Was it this man's sin or his parents' sin? And we're told he was born blind from birth. So how can a baby in the womb sin? So obviously the question isn't really about the man. It's about his parents. The disciples are wondering. They're simply working out of their own religious understanding what they had been schooled in from their very youth. And Jesus basically answers them, neither. It doesn't matter. That's a pretty profound statement from Jesus. And then he says, if this man was born blind, it is so that God's wonderful work can be seen in the world. And it was for that reason that Jesus worked this great sign, this great work. Oh, we could get all caught up in talking about blindness and seeing, clear sight. We could get all caught up in the marvelous miracle that occurred in that moment. But the story is much longer than that. In fact, that's really only a few sentences at the beginning of the story. There's a lot more in this story, and most of it is about a dialogue between Jesus and the man and the religious authorities of his day, the religious authorities and the man's family, and then again, the religious authorities and the man, and then Jesus and the man. So it's, you know, it's a scene from a movie. And yet, if we get all of that together, we begin to see some important details, and those details speak to us. Because here we have a man. Let's talk about the man for a moment. He was born blind, and we're told that he was even a beggar. So he was pretty much well known to the community. Having been blind from birth, he could undertake no useful occupation, at least in the time in which he lived. And so his lot in life was to sit on the corner and ask for the generosity of strangers. He was to sit on the corner, basically, and ask others to take care of him out of their excess or out of their charity. And so this was the pattern of his life. And when people do that on a constant basis in the same street corners, the same precincts, we have a tendency to know who those people are. So this was a man fairly well known to the community. And so it's an interesting detail that once he was able to see, people were saying, oh, that's not the same one. You see, because they defined him not by who he was and whose son he was. They defined him because he was blind. They defined him by his disability. That says something to us right there, and there's a whole sermon in that, but we're going to move on from that. I just want you to drop that on you for a moment. But then he goes to the religious authorities, probably in part because in the law of Moses, whenever someone was healed, whenever someone had this kind of experience, it was required that they give a thank offering. That was part of the religious practice of the time. And if some wonderful thing happens to you like this, then you go and you make an offering, whether it's prayer or you go to the temple and offer a sacrifice. Whatever it is, you needed to do something to show God your gratitude for this marvelous gift that you have been given. But rather than rejoicing with the man that God had done this marvelous thing for him, they began to question him. It was sort of an inquisition of sorts. They wanted to know how this could be. Because, after all, they truly believed, just like the disciples did, that this man was guilty of something, either guilty of his own sin or guilty of his parents' sin. And after all, God is not so forgiving. Especially since you didn't offer sacrifice before you were healed. In other words, the grace of God was not because of something you did to please God. So it became important to them that all of this was happening out of the normal course of their religious observance. All of this was happening outside their law, outside of their normal way of relating to God. And so they said, this has got to be wrong. It's not the way we always do it. Does that sound familiar? Well, so this goes back and forth, and you heard the conversation that went on. And then they drag in his parents. And, you know, he had just been failed by the religious community. They didn't support him and rejoice with him because of this marvelous gift of God. And so they failed him, and now his parents are dragged in. And in a way, they kind of fail him too, because after all, they could support him and also rejoice with him. After all, it was their son, and now he could see, he could have a whole life again. And they were more afraid of what the religious authorities were going to do to them than to stand in solidarity with their son. And so they sort of took a weaselly way out. They said, oh, we're not going to answer that question. After all, he's of age. Ask him. You see, because they had a right to be afraid. Because we heard that little line in there that they were afraid that they would be put out of the synagogue. Now, to us, we'd say, okay, well, they got thrown out of the church. Who cares? Life goes on, right? Yeah, okay. Well, in reality, it's a concept that we are very much aware of in our culture in this part of the world. We mentioned it last week in passing, but it's relevant again. It's called shunning. That if you were put out of the synagogue, no one was to have anything to do with you in that village, in that town, in that city. No one was to do business with you. If you went to buy something at market, they were supposed to not deal with you. And in fact, if you approached somebody to talk to you, they were to turn their backs. So to be put out of the synagogue is a pretty hefty penalty to pay. And so it's no wonder that the parents were a little afraid, because their lives, essentially as they knew it, would have been taken away from them. And so they had a good answer as far as they were concerned. After all, they didn't need to suffer that. He was old enough. He could take care of himself. And so they said to the religious authority, ask him. He's of age. He'll tell you. And so they drag him in again. And they ask him again. And this time, he gets a little porky about the whole thing. Because he says to them, why are you asking me? I'm not going to tell you anything different. I told you everything the first time around. They were inquiring of him, being inquisitors in a sense, probably trying to trip him up a little bit and getting him to say something that they could latch onto and say, ah, see, we know this is wrong. All of this is wrong. Wrong, wrong, wrong. And we're going to pay the price for it. But he told them all the truth from the beginning, and the truth is the truth. And so when he said, well, I told you once already, nothing's going to change. Do you want to know so that you can become Jesus' disciples too? That was enough for them. Out. Out you go. Now, he was shunned. He was put out of the synagogue. All because God did something wonderful for him. Sounds a little weird. Sounds a little inconsistent. But that is indeed what happened. Interestingly, toward the end of the story, we hear how Jesus heard that the man had been put out. And what does Jesus do? He goes looking for the man. The man didn't go back running back to Jesus and saying, "Look what you did to me now." No, Jesus went looking for the man to have this conversation with him, which ultimately led to the man professing his faith in Jesus. A few weeks hence, as is our tradition, after Easter, we will celebrate on a Sunday the story that we often gives the name to the Sunday, Good Shepherd Sunday. Now, you all know that story. I am the Good Shepherd. Why? Because I have a flock of 100 sheep. One of them goes awry, so I leave the 99 and I go searching for the one that has been put out. Sound familiar? And so this becomes a pattern with Jesus. That those who are thought to be punished for their sin are made whole again. And when the world rejects them because of the wonderful thing that God has done for them, Jesus still goes out and searches for them all the more, to give them the kind of deep insight, the deep sight, insight, the deep understanding that he needed to understand that he was not being put out for no reason, but in fact, Jesus would be there for him. So this story isn't just a nice miracle healing story about Jesus giving sight to a blind person. This story is in the gospel to tell us about ourselves. That God does wonderful things for us. Each and every one of us who comes to faith might be able to look back in the course of our life and see one or another moment when God seemed very powerful. When something in our lives seemed to be beyond our strength and our capacity, and God reaches down and touches us deeply in the heart. Or even, perhaps, sometimes, God changes the circumstances of our lives, as he did this man. But changing the circumstances of the life are not as important as the transformation of the heart. That's what this story is about. Because the man could have gone off on his own way. Didn't have to make a fuss about it. Didn't have to give the thank offering. Didn't have to deal with the religious authorities. Didn't have to deal with his parents. Didn't have to do any of that. But he did it nonetheless because, in fact, he knew his heart was forever changed. And that he had been touched deeply by the very presence of God. So too is it with us. And perhaps we don't come to faith right away. He didn't either. Notice all of this was going on long before he finally professed to Jesus, "I believe. I believe." I'd like you to think on an old hymn that we all know. We probably could sing it even without the organ and without the hymnal in front of us. You know it. "Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound that saved someone like me. I was lost, but now I'm found. I was blind, and now I see." Those words echo this gospel lesson. Those words talk about grace, about God's immense love for us, regardless of whether we deserve it or not, of God reaching down and transforming and changing our lives, finding us when we are lost, finding us when we are shunned, finding us when we are put out, changing our